Misha Olo Itewa, Itevene, sempre bacalara del Manevene. Se ci picchia bande, se è bacalara, picchia me.
Hi, this is Gerald Celente, and it's Trends This Week. And like the week before and the week before that, what a week we have. And of course, yesterday, it was the primary in Wisconsin. And it kind of happened as most people thought it would, according to the polls. And that was Cruz beat Trump and Sanders beat Clinton. So what does it all mean? Well, for Trends Journal subscribers, they know we did a trend alert, an hour forecast for what's going to happen in November. And for Trends This Week tuner and inners, we'll tell you what it is. Clinton Sanders White House. And that's what we're forecasting. And again, we're political atheists. We only look at the facts for what they are, not the way we want them to be. And certainly, I mean, the only way I would vote for Hillary Clinton is somebody put a gun to my head. But that's so, or Donald Trump or any of them. So anyway, that's the way it's shaping up. If you go back to our Trends Journal a year ago, our Spring 2015 Trends Journal, we called it, the cover was the Presidential Reality Show. Liars, cowards, freaks, and fools. Welcome to the Presidential Reality Show. Now remember, we wrote this 2 months, and called it that, 2 months before Donald Trump, a reality show champion, threw his hat into the ring as a contestant. Excuse me. So anyway, here's what we wrote. If the election were held today and Hillary Clinton survives the cash for influence scandal, we forecast Clinton as the winner. On issues of gay rights, women's rights, and abortion, Cruz, Paul, Rubio, Carson, Fiorina, and Huckabee will find weak support among a sizable portion of women voters. With all the candidates, including Clinton, on the same war page, and none presenting strong and unique economic policies to truly create jobs and increase wages, what separates Clinton from the guys is the girls. We had a quote from USA Today. Chelsea Clinton, female president, will make a substantial difference. Now it's April 10, 2015. And we go on to write, in the 2008 presidential election, 70.4 million women cast ballots versus 60.7 million men. In the 2012 race, Obama won the two-party vote among female voters by 12 points, 56% to 44%. So, in our trend alert, what we wrote was that in the absence of a major scandal, and if the current field of candidates stands, a Clinton victory was sealed last week when Donald Trump, already suffering women's problems, in quotes, in the polls, sunk 73% into negative territory when he said if a woman had an abortion and they were legal, she should be subject to, quote, some form of punishment. So that's the end of Trump. Ain't no way he could come back, because when the election begins, once the candidates are selected, and if he becomes the Democrat, the Republican candidate, he is not going to survive the women problem. And as for Bernie Sanders, excuse me, he has, we don't see him winning on the delegate count. I mean, we could be wrong, but as the way it's panning out, I mean, he has to win New York and California. And in New York, you know, the millennial voter has to be a registered voter to vote. And that's going to be a tough one for him. And when I said that they're all on the same pages, on the war page, you know, Bernie plays that card. I voted against Iraq, and if we have the money that we didn't spend in Iraq, you could get free education, you could get free health care. It's true. Bernie did vote against the Iraq War. However, it's not the whole story. There's a website called the Peace Resource. And if you go to that and look up Bernie's record, he voted against the war in Iraq. Nevertheless, he has a history of supporting war during his time in the Senate. He supported President Bill Clinton's 1999 war in Kosovo. He voted multiple times to fund the Iraq War. He supports the continued occupation of Afghanistan. And he supports Israel's military occupation of Palestine. He also supports President Obama's ongoing drone campaign. And it just goes on, and all the links are there that ties Bernie into not only that, but every U.S. bombing of Iraq from 1992 under Bill Clinton. And he also supported the sanctions that Bill Clinton put in place in Iraq that, according to the United Nations, killed over 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of 5. And again, there's that famous interview of Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State at the time, on CBS being interviewed by Leslie Stahl. And when asked by Leslie Stahl if the price of the sanctions was worth the death of 500,000 Iraqi children, she said, yes, the price was worth it. So, you know, when you tell Bernie fans the facts, they don't want to hear it. And Sanders voted in 2001 for the authorization for the United States use of military force. And that was the congressional resolution that was the basis for George Bush invasion and occupation of Afghanistan and launching the war on terror. So you tell these things to Bernie lovers and they don't want to hear it. They get angry. I've had it happen. One person said, that's not true. Everything you're saying is not true. And she walked away from it. One after another. So, yeah, Bernie, you know, on the Wall Street, you know, level, yeah, it's fine. You know, I agree with him. But to me, the bigger issue is peace. Because with peace comes morality. And with morality, that will take care of, I believe, the problems on Wall Street. That's second to me under peace, because the world is going to war more and more. Look what's going on now in the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia, Nagorno-Karabakh. It's a disputed area that the Armenians say is theirs. The Azerbaijanis say is theirs, and there's been a ceasefire there for 22 years. And ironically, when Secretary of State John Kerry was speaking to the president of Azerbaijan, the very next day Azerbaijan launched an attack against in the disputed area. And Russia, of course, supports Armenia, and Turkey doesn't have a very good record with Armenians, lest anyone forget the slaughter back in the turn of the 20th century, into the 19th, 20th century. They support Azerbaijan. and Turkey's Prime Minister, Erdogan, has been very forceful in spreading his beliefs around the area, including, of course, the incursions into Syria, into Iraq. And when his party lost the vote in June of 2015, he reignited the war against the Kurdish separatists. And of course, that's an ongoing slaughter as well. So when I'm saying the world is at war or going to war, it's one of our top trends for 2016. The Syria ceasefire is gone. There's an escalation. They just shot down a Syrian plane by those moderate rebels. And you know where they get their weapons from to shoot down those planes? Well, the United States. And you all know what a moderate rebel looks like. We've seen them over and over again. And we know who their leaders are. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. You haven't seen one photo. You have no idea. It's just the United States imperialism in another country. And the Iraq war is out of control. It just keeps declining. And of course, Afghanistan's ongoing with no end. And now there's talk of by President Obama to join with our allies to stabilize Libya, which has become destabilized by the very people that the United States and our NATO allies armed, the so-called Islamic fundamentalists, to overthrow Gaddafi. So now, of course, that country is in complete chaos, and it was a stable country and relatively prosperous. In fact, the most prosperous country in Africa until President Obama, Hillary Clinton, Samantha Powers, and Susan Rice decided on a humanitarian mission. And of course, the war in Yemen that's now killed over 6,500 people, that continues as well. And now the United States, of course, is escalating its presence in the South China Sea, and now China is building up its military as well in response. So when you're looking at the budgets of what's going on in nations, China's escalation in their military budget is quite dramatic, considering where it used to be and where it is now. And again, it's only getting much, much worse. The global military spending increased in 2015. The figure for the United States, when you look at beyond just, you know, the budget that they put out for the Pentagon, the United States remain by far the leading financer of military expansion. It's spending $600 billion, according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. But the real figure, according to the Center for International Policy, when you look at the Pentagon's black budget, contingency money for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and other hidden expenses, according to the Center for International Policy, it's over $1 trillion. So the $600 billion is bogus. $1 trillion to the military-industrial complex, and you hear every one of the candidates, Bernie Sanders doesn't talk about it, he avoids foreign policy, every one of the candidates, every one of the candidates talks about how we have to build America's military bigger. $1 trillion a year is not enough. So the Chinese now are the second largest spenders. Now remember, the United States is spending $1 trillion. China is spending the grand total of $215 billion. And then, of course, we hear all the propaganda virtually every day on how to hate Russia. Russia, in 2015, spent $66.4 billion on their military. $66.4 billion. But our good pals, the beheaders-in-chief over there in Saudi Arabia, who buy a lot of the weapons from the United States military-industrial complex, who also make big contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Yeah. And she changed some laws to make it easier for them to buy more sophisticated weapons. Well, of course, that wasn't a payback. That was just money that went to the foundation. Remember, Russia's spending $66.4 billion. Saudi Arabia, $87.2 billion. And they spent over $5 billion in the Yemen war alone. And as the war talk heats up, you have countries in Eastern Europe, now Latvia, Estonia, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, all increasing their military budgets as the war drums beat louder. Remember, when all else fails, they take you to war. And that's the way we see it, because it's failing miserably on the economic front. Of course, when you're losing dough, you cut your military budget if you're smart. And the people that are losing a lot of money, people like Venezuela, they cut their military spending by some 64%. But in the United States, as our economy just enriches the rich and everybody else gets poorer, we're spending $1 trillion. Can you imagine? $1 trillion. And overall, they estimate $1.7 trillion. Consuming some 2.3% of global gross GDP. And when you look at the Nagorno-Karabakh region escalation between Azerbaijan and Armenia, it's really important to see again who's causing what and who started it. So, and I mention this because that whole region, you have the Ukraine, of course, is it's up for grabs. And now with those Panama Papers that came out showing how the rich do the same thing as the major corporations and hide their money in offshore countries' tax havens so they don't have to pay tax like we, the little people, have to pay every penny that the government could squeeze out of us. You have the Ukrainian Prime Minister Poroshenko, who's now being accused of laundering money, according to the Panama Papers as well. So you have destabilization there, destabilization going back to Armenia and Azerbaijan. And it's important, too, again, as I mentioned earlier, that Turkey supports Azerbaijan, and Erdogan has been very vocal in doing so. And I said, when all else fails, they take you to war. All things are connected. Azerbaijan was doing very well in the oil business. And now with Brent crude around $38 a barrel, down from its high of $115 a barrel back in 2015, June. 2014 June, to now where it is, down over 70%, they're hurting economically. So when all else fails, they take you to war. It gets the people's mind off the financial crisis right away when the war drums start beating louder and louder. And Russia has some 5,000 troops in Armenia in order to deter a Turkish-led war. So this is escalating very rapidly over there. Again, going back to Ukraine, that economy is in shambles. The IMF, by the way, came out again yesterday, and they keep doing this over and over again. Not only did they have they in the past downgraded their expectations for GDP growth, but what they've also done now is they're warning about a potential economic crisis escalating because of the decline in China. And China gobbles up some 40 to 50% of the natural resources used in production, whether it's copper, zinc, uranium, iron ore. So with China slowing down, the IMF is concerned about much of the world slowing down because they export very heavily into China. As a matter of fact, just yesterday, some numbers came out from Germany and shows that their industrial production now fell to the lowest level in 6 months. So it doesn't look good, but the war drums keep beating louder. So going back to the presidential reality show, we're saying that as it looks now, it's going to be Clinton, and she's going to bring in Bernie as her running mate. And the reason being is that Bernie is playing an Obama, and he's doing a very good job at it. You remember Obama's famous campaign slogan back in 2008, folks? Hope and change you could believe in. Yep. Hope and change. Transparency. Remember, he was going to make everything transparent. He became transparent. You could see right through him. I mentioned before about the military budget in the United States. And they have a thing called the black budget and contingency money that we're not allowed to look at. How's that for transparency? No, we're not. We're too stupid. Hey, if we look at them, then ISIS will know them, and then they'll use them against us. They'll make up some stupid story like that. Going back and tying this all together on Bernie Sanders and Obama, hope and change you could believe in, and the people bought it. Oh, they bought it big time. So what's Bernie Sanders' slogan? Well, from Barack, change you can believe in, Obama, it's now Bernie, a future to believe in, Sanders. And when you look at his campaign literature and those plaques and placards that they hold up, a future to believe in, the believe in is in bold. So considering Hillary Clinton's very low ratings or personality, it's like a 52 negative, and her pro-war policies, Bernie becomes the perfect counterbalance to that. Because people, the millennials, the financially desperate college students getting out with $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt, and the millennial voters that have lousy jobs and no future that are going to Bernie and believing what he's saying, that's going to be very positive for the election when it comes up in November, because Bernie will bring them back into the fold. So that's a big one. And it's needed for Clinton to bring the vote tallies higher. And who is going to be the Republican candidate? To me, it's up for grabs. Because we just don't see Trump pulling it off. And if Cruz runs, again, it goes back to our earlier trend forecast that we made a year ago, and we affirm in this is that on issues of abortion, gay rights, women's rights, poof, when that election starts, man, if Cruz is out there, you know, he's cruising for a bruising because he's not going to win those votes. And again, over 10 million more women vote than men. So it's just a pure numbers game. So Bernie's bringing him back into the fold. And, you know, very interestingly, you know, they're going to have a debate on, I believe, April 14th, Sanders and Clinton. And when you listen to their debates and you read the transcripts, number one, they've strategically avoided maliciously attacking each other. They do at a very low level. Not like, you know, what happened in the Republican election, in the Republican debates, where they really went at each other, especially Trump. I remember Christie going after Rubio, and then the Trump and Rubio, and Trump calling Ted Cruz lying Ted, and on and on. That hasn't happened in the Democratic side. But more importantly, conspicuously absent in the debates and on the campaign trail are in-depth foreign policy measures each would take if elected. And again, Sanders monotonously rants that he voted against the Iraq War. But again, when you look at the facts, he has quite a pro-war record. Matter of fact, he even backed that billion-dollar package, the aid package, for the government of Ukraine, which the United States was responsible for engineering the coup. So here we are, no money for Flint, with their poison water. No money for education. No money, they're cutting back on food stamps. But $1 billion for the criminal government of Ukraine. And again, Bernie supported regime change in Libya and in Syria and numerous other pro-war initiatives. Oh, by the way, the people up in Vermont love that he's a proponent, a strong proponent, of that $1.4 trillion F-35 fighter jet cost overrun fiasco, for which he champions a squadron to be stationed at the Burlington, Vermont airport. Oh, yeah. Now that's a dove for you, huh? Yeah, dove dressed up like an F-35. I guess doves have, you know, maybe from the GMOs, they look like F-35s now. But of course, Bernie's BS is that, I think you may have heard this line once or twice before in your life, it will create jobs. Rather have them there than over in North Carolina, says Bernie. So it's just BS, Bernie. But again, these facts, when presented to the liberal millennial core base of the Democratic Party, are either dismissed or vehemently denied. So what Bernie's doing is he's building the base and building it very strongly. And again, there's no money for the people in Flint, Michigan. There's no money to upgrade our systems of our rotted infrastructure. But there's plenty of dough for the war hawks. And Bernie is one of them. When we look at the water situation, people ask me frequently, you know, what are the two trends that you see? What are the biggest trends, they say, that you see that are going to be strong for a long time. And I say the same thing over and over again. Food and water. Clean food, clean water. Not only are there going to be water shortages, but shortages of clean water are going to be very, very high. And again, you know, as a kid, one of the first things you learn in school, like when you're learning history and you're old enough to understand it, they say, you know, the Roman Empire collapsed. And one of the things that was happening was, you know, they were using lead pipes for their water. Wow. No kidding. Well, they were using it then and they're using it now. But of course, now it's okay. So USA Today did an investigation and an analysis of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency data showed about 350 schools and daycare centers failed lead tests, a total of about 470 times from 2012 through 2015. And that represents some 20% of the water system nationally, testing above the agency's, quote, action level of 15 parts per billion. But of course, in real life, no parts per billion of lead into the system, the human system, are very healthy. So water is going to be an enormous issue. And, you know, they had that over here in New York just back in February, not ancient history. They had new measurements at the Indian Point nuclear power plant in Buchanan, and it shows levels of radioactive tritium 80% higher than was reported the week before. And, of course, the plant operator insists that the spill is not dangerous. The groundwater wells have no contact with any drinking water supplies, and the spill will dissipate before it reaches the Hudson River, a senior Entergy, that's the folks that run the joint, executive said back in February. So, then you go down to Mississippi. High levels of lead found in Mississippi's capital waters, one after another. Panel slams Michigan for Flint water crisis. I mentioned the nuclear plant in Buchanan leaking nuclear waste into the drinking water. Newark schools will test pupils for lead poisoning. Study links pollution to deaths. A quarter of all deaths globally are attributed to environmental factors that are preventable, such as air and water pollution, according to a new report by the World Health Organization. Water contamination found in Vermont wells, places like North Bennington, as a result of that Hoosick Falls contamination by that plant that makes Teflon. So water is going to be one of the really, really, really nonstop, I hate to put it in terms like this, but investment opportunities, because there's going to be a shortage of it. You know, one of my books that I wrote was Trends 2000. I wrote this in 1988. And in that book, in the back, I went from A to Z on what were going to be opportunities to consider. The Directory of Profit Opportunities. And here's what I wrote about water. Now remember, this is going back to 1988. Water shortages and concerns about safety, with shortages and concerns about safety, water will be a very good business in the 1990s. And we recommend investing in water sources, distribution, purification, just about anything that has to do with water. Sales of bottled water and purification devices grew 68% over the past 5 years, and we expect them to continue growing at this rate over the next 5 years. Remember how in the movie The Graduate, the guy took Dustin Hoffman aside and told him what the big opportunity was? Plastics, he said. Well, that was in the 1960s. Now it's water. Water and food, especially clean food. And you may or may not know, but I coined that term back in 1993, clean food. And the New York Times actually even did a nice piece on it back in 1996. And you look at what's going on with countries like Saudi Arabia, China, buying up agricultural land throughout Africa, Australia, United States. Both resources, natural resources, food, water. We had an issue over here not far from us in Kingston, up in Woodstock, where Niagara Bottling wanted to use Cooper Lake to drain the water out of there. The people fought it, and they beat them back. So finding fresh water is going to be a big, big issue over the coming years with no end in sight. And again, things are only getting much worse in that area. I'd like to move over a little bit to see what's going on economically. The markets are only going up for one reason and one reason only. And that is the negative interest rates and zero interest rate policy. $60 billion a month. $60 billion a month occur because of stock buybacks in the United States. It means companies buying back their own stock, that drives up the price. The reason they're buying it back is they're getting the money for nothing. And the same thing with the merger and acquisition activity. You're getting the dough for free. So as long as this Ponzi scheme keeps going like this, the markets are going to keep going up. I mean, there's no question about it, because they're just feeding money for the speculators to gamble. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about the former Federal Reserve president from Dallas, the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, Dick Fisher, who likened this monetary stimulus, this quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy, using his words, like cocaine and heroin. And that's all it is. So we keep thinking that these markets are going to collapse, and they keep coming up with another toxic cocktail to keep the money junkies alive. And that's all this is. They're toxic cocktails. No one's ever heard of negative interest rates. They never existed. You buy bonds with negative yields, which means that you get less money than you loaned out when you cash in the bond at maturity? Why would anybody do that? And then again, you look at what a criminal financial scam all this is, and go back to these Panama Papers that have been released. And you're seeing one world leader after another being involved in it. And I have to hand it to the people of Iceland. As soon as they found out their prime minister was washing dough over in these safe haven countries, the people demonstrated. They took to the streets. And they forced them to resign. Could you imagine that? They forced him to resign. And here, you know, why you don't see a lot of American names on this list. And again, put this into perspective. This is only one law firm out of Panama. Could you imagine all the others that are doing this? But the reason you don't see a lot of big American names on it, they don't have to go to Panama. All they got to do is go to Delaware and other tax haven states like Nevada. So they're just doing a different deal over there. But it shows you the criminality behind the system. And also is that the laws are in place in a neo-feudal society for only we the little people. We the little people have to pay our taxes to the penny, or they'll hound us to the grave. We the little people have to obey every letter of the law while the big guys avoid it, whether it's avoiding it with hiding their tax money. It's legal. But of course, we can't afford to do that, nor do we make the kind of money that warrants that. And we have to live to the letter of the law, as I said, as they don't, because that's what you have in a neo-feudal society. There are different laws for the political nobility and different laws for the financial elite than we, the workers in Slavelandia. So you didn't see one head roll from the Wall Street crimes. All they do is pay fines. Well, you or I, you know, you go to jail. Look what they did a couple of weeks ago. They locked up this guy because he didn't return a video cassette, like from 10 years ago. But yet these criminals get away with murder. And they do. Get away with murder? How about George Bush, huh? How about Dick Cheney? How about Colin Powell? How about Condoleezza Rice? How about Donald Rumsfeld? How about all those people that cooked the lies to get us into the Iraq War? No justice for them. Why not have a war crimes tribunal to find out who knew what when that led us into this illegal and immoral war? Because it won't happen because the game is rigged. The financial game is rigged. The legal system is rigged. It's a rigged game. And you're seeing what's going on and with these Panama Papers. And it's, you know, one after another. You have even now Cameron, his late father, the Prime Minister of the UK. His father involved. One after another. It's a different set of rules in a neo-feudal society. And what the media keeps doing is they keep focusing on people that are connected to Putin that are washing money. And they avoid all the others, particularly Poroshenko, the Prime Minister of Ukraine, who, of course, the United States put in play when they overthrew the democratically elected government of Ukraine. So, as we're looking at the elections, we're looking at the economy, we're looking at war, all of this is tied together. All things are connected, like the blood which unites us all. And there seems to be a disconnect in that. As I said, the candidates could talk all they want about how they're going to you know, bring back economic prosperity, which they rarely ever really do in detail. But they studiously avoid talking about peace. Peace is not part of the platform. It's gone. No one talks about it. It's not in the presidential reality show. Yet, if you say you're going to elect me and I'm going to melt ISIS around the world, then you're a hero. They like you. But on other issues, no. Not a peep about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. It's very sad. Are you for or against peace? What's your position on it? How do you feel about it? What are you doing to bring it about? Oh, they have these peace demonstrations every now and then, but they don't go anywhere because there's no action plan. We've been trying to launch Occupy Peace, and it's very difficult. Very difficult to raise money to make it happen. I know billionaires, and I know multimillionaires. They've offered me not a penny for peace. None of the presidential candidates is speaking about peace. The war drums are growing louder. As I said, we're very concerned with more NATO action in Libya, destabilization throughout the Middle East, spreading war in Ukraine, and now Armenia and Azerbaijan. There's nothing for peace. I wonder why. I wonder why people dislike it so much. Why is peace off the agenda? Why do they... How come? Imagine if they had a peace candidate. So I say this because they could talk about rebuilding the economy all they want. But without morality, we're going nowhere. Again, I just read you the numbers from the latest report that came out that shows $1 trillion a year that the United States is spending in from the Pentagon, black budget, and other secretive war operations, including, of course, the CIA and other associated ventures of war. $1 trillion, black budget and contingency money. So peace, to me, has to be the primary goal to bring about economic prosperity, because economic prosperity is just a small part of peace. Peace is much broader. It brings beauty and joy. You hear it in the music. There's very little joy and beauty. You see it in the dress, very little joy and beauty. You know, when you look at the dress, go back to the 1930s. It was swing time. 1930s, we were in a depression. Think about it. It was the hottest, happiest music America ever known. And look at the style. Look at the high style of the 30s. It was a time of peace. Oh, yeah, there are things bubbling over in Europe. But the United States was disconnected from it in a very large way until, you know, when we get to war, 1941. Of course, presidents were pushing for it. Just like, you know, you had FDR promising he wouldn't get us into World War II, and he did. And you had Woodrow Wilson before him promising he wouldn't. Re-elected, he wouldn't get us into World War I, and he did. So anyway, peace to me is a big agenda issue. And when you look at it and put the pieces together again, look at our infrastructure. Do you know that they're talking about closing down the Washington Metro at our nation's capital for about 6 months because the infrastructure of that thing is so rotted? And you know when they built it? They only built it 40 years ago. I remember, I used to be in Washington back then. 40 years, that's how crappy the construction is. And that's how lousy our infrastructure has become. Could you imagine having to close this thing down for all that time? 6 months. And then look at New York. It's one day after another. L train pain could spread. Stops in Manhattan might have to close when repairs begin on East River Tunnel. Yep. MTA officials say they need to shut down the century-old tunnel, perhaps in both directions at once, for extensive repairs due to age. And you know when they're going to start beginning work? In late 2018 and 2019. Our country is going to crap socially, morally, financially, infrastructure. I've read to you the numbers, $30,000 a year. That's the salary, the salary of people, 51% of America. There's no money for the people, no money for infrastructure, but plenty of dough for war. Subway stench proves tough to track down. Yep. For weeks, subway riders at the Herald Square station in Manhattan have detected a foul stench similar to rotten eggs or worse. Well, let's see. The thing was, it's over 100 years old, right? A rotted infrastructure. It's like the, you know, it's the subways of Calcutta, as you call them. And then, of course, even when they build new things, record shows early worries about leaks at new stop. Suit faults concrete at a subway station that cost $2.4 billion. It was New York City's first new subway in a quarter of a century, and officials and riders marked the opening of the Hudson Yards station in September with much fanfare. But less than a month later, riders began to notice water leaking from above. Puddles appear on the floor. Icicles dangle from the ceiling. Isn't that wonderful? So no money for peace, plenty of dough for war. And the politicians in place are doing nothing really about it. It's one criminal activity after another. The EPA, by the way, has not been watching fracking sites for groundwater contamination. That hardly gets reported. A report from the Government Accounting Office found that regulators at the Environmental Protection Agency have not been keeping tabs on whether or not wastewater from fracking is seeping into drinking water. Quote, the Environmental Protection Agency has not collected specific inspection and complete or consistent enforcement information or consistently conducted oversight activities to assess whether state and EPA-managed underground injection control, UIC, Class 2 programs are protecting underground water sources of drinking water. That's only drinking water. Yeah, I wonder why so many people get cancer. See, I have no idea. Huh. Couldn't be because of the trillions of tons of poisons that they inject into the water, into the earth, and into the air. Nah, there's no scientific studies. 40 states are currently approved to have primary responsibility for maintaining their injection site, leaving 10 states to be managed by 5 EPA regional offices. However, the report notes that the EPA is still obligated, quote, to conduct specific activities to ensure that the state and EPA-managed programs are protecting underground sources of drinking water. And here's the key point. Fracking wastewater is a combination of heavy metals, such as arsenic or mercury, and salt water and various other unnamed chemicals. Unnamed chemicals. They refuse to tell us what chemicals they're using under the guise that it's a corporate secret and it's proprietary information. Isn't that something? The information EPA collects is at a summary level and not specific enough to assess whether states are meeting inspection goals established to protect underground sources of drinking water. Well, I began this by talking about lead in the water, and this is a lot worse than that. And nothing being done. But all those politicians out there, with the exception of a few, Bernie's not talking about war, and he is favorable on restricting fracking, but not much more. And then, of course, you look at the new report warns of risks of earthquakes in Oklahoma. Yep, because of fracking. Well, it's either frack the ground or frack you. And that's what they're doing. They're fracking us. They're fracking us to death. But it's up to us to change it. Remember, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. Samuel Adams. So that's some of today's trends this week, or this week's trends this week. Hang on to your seat. Next week looks like it's going to be another rumble in the jungle, whether it's fighting overseas or destabilized financial markets. It's only a matter of time before they fail.